Hello, and a warm welcome to South Asia Chat, brought to you by the Institute of South Asian Studies at the National University of Singapore. I'm your host, Dr. Imran Ahmed, a consultant for the Institute. Today, we'll be speaking about India's Pakistan policy. It's no coincidence that India and Pakistan host a striking array of political and sociological similarities. The two countries share a common colonial inheritance, the remnants of which can be seen in the governing structures, state institutions, and constitutional legal systems that to this day bear marked resemblances to one another. The interplay of historical, social, and political forces over the region have also contributed to the making of a remarkable diversity of cultures, religions, and languages, and woven them into an intricate, complex, and enduring social mosaic throughout the Indian subcontinent. Consequently, India and Pakistan feature social, economic, and cultural attributes such as multi-ethnic, multi-class, multi-caste, multilingual, and multi-religious communities that are common to both states. Despite these striking similarities, the two countries are perhaps known more for their hostilities and distrust than their commonalities. A major theme in the study of international relations within South Asian studies is the historical sources of conflict between these two neighboring nuclear-armed states. Indeed, India and Pakistan have gone to war on four occasions, and anxiety over future conflict often looms at large. To help us understand India-Pakistan relations, from the Indian side of things is Dr. Stuti Bhatnagar. Dr. Stuti is an adjunct research fellow associated with the School of Social Sciences at the University of Adelaide and the University of New South Wales in Australia. With a PhD in politics and international relations from the University of Adelaide, she specializes in Indian foreign policy and has published in a number of reputed journals, is a frequent commentator on developments in South Asia, and is the author of the book, India's Pakistan Policy, How Think Tanks Are Shaping Foreign Relations, published by Routledge last year. Dr. Stuti, welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Ahmed. Thank you for having me.
We know that the relations between India and Pakistan are consequential, not just for South Asia, but also for the globe more broadly. In your study of India's foreign policy, what have been some of the historical sources of tension between the two nations?
Well, many of the sources of tension between India and Pakistan stem from colonial history and the very violent partition in 1947. And since then, the India-Pakistan relationship has been characterized by several disputes, differing consensus on some key issues. And I think the two most prominent are the struggle between a struggle over Jammu and Kashmir and terrorism. There are several contested borders, people divided over these borders. The relationship has been complicated further by various wars in 1948, 65, 1971, and in 1999 in Kargil. Now, Pakistan's support of extremist and separatist groups in the Kashmir Valley and acts of terrorism in India have created significant concerns for Indian foreign policy. Other disputes include the sharing of river waters and the administration of the Indus Waters Treaty. Territorial disputes include the Sir Creek region and in the Siachen Glacier, along with disagreements regarding economic arrangements required for trade cooperation. More than anything, I would say the general perception of distrust on both sides of the border, owing to a troubled history and the historical baggage of the partition of the subcontinent in 1947, continue to be very crucial here as well. The nuclear dimension, like you also mentioned, the acquisition of nuclear weapons by both India and Pakistan has led to a further escalation of tensions. And it became very apparent during the Kargil War in 1999, and the military standoff on the borders in 2002. The nuclear dynamic has also led to significant international attention on the dispute, as has political developments in Jammu and Kashmir. India and Pakistan also compete for regional influence in South Asia, as well as in the Middle East, particularly with regards to the Persian Gulf states. Now, there have been attempts at dialogue over the years in various formats, but they have been largely unsuccessful. The relationship is at a particularly low point at the moment, with regular ceasefire violations on the border and a very politically charged nationalist foreign policy narrative on both sides.
Thank you very much for those insights. That's a very long list of things. I wanted to talk a little bit about the US now and its role in the region. So I wanted to ask, it's still early days in the White House for President Joe Biden. How do you think the change in administration in Washington will affect India's interests in its neighboring region and shape its Pakistan strategy?
Well, it is very early to tell, though. But the India-US partnership has significantly improved in the last decade or so, and that is likely to continue during the Biden administration as well. There is a desire to build on the India-US defense and strategic relationship that has been expressed by President Biden as well as others in the administration. There is also likely to be a broadening of defense cooperation between India and the US bilaterally, as well as through the quadrilateral security dialogue between the US, Japan, Japan, India, and Australia. Biden actually has a better understanding of the relationship with India as Vice President to President Obama. He played a lead role both as Chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and as the Vice President in deepening the US strategic engagement, people-to-people ties, collaboration with India on global challenges, etc. In the current administration, however, South Asia, apart from developments in Afghanistan so far, does not seem to be on their radar. The US under Biden is more likely to focus on Russia and China and rebuilding the relationship with European allies to begin with. But it will be interesting how US foreign policy in South Asia unfolds. Having said that, I don't believe the change in administration in the US is likely to change India's strategy in the neighborhood or with Pakistan in any particular way. While previous US governments have made attempts at mediation between India and Pakistan, India has always strongly rejected such attempts. A big part of Indian foreign policy, however, is to keep the focus on Pakistan's role in terrorism, and it has often called on US governments to take stronger action against Pakistan. I think it will continue to do that with the Biden team as well. And curtailing China's influence also represents a sort of convergence of interests between the US and India at the moment. On its part, Pakistan always remains keen to attract U.S. attention towards what happens in Jammu and Kashmir and wants the Biden administration to take a stronger position on the current Indian government's policy in Jammu and Kashmir on human rights and violations and so on. And there are some indications that this might happen, particularly from what we could see in the election campaign speeches as well. So Biden has called on the Indian government to take steps to restore rights for people in Jammu and Kashmir. There has been reference to Indian government's restrictions on dissent, shutting down or slowing down of the internet, etc. A concern that has also been raised by Vice President Kamala Harris. Joe Biden has also expressed disappointment, but again, only during the campaign, on the measures that the government of India has taken with the implementation of the National Register of Citizens and the passage of the Citizenship Amendment Act last year. I think unlike the Trump government, which largely ignored Indian policy on Kashmir, Biden might be more vocal and critical of any suppression of democracy in J&K, and how the Indian government would respond to this would be interesting, but time will tell. One aspect where there might be some movement is developments in Afghanistan. So Pakistan's involvement is critical to the Afghanistan peace process, and the US is always keen to keep them involved. But there is also an Indian dimension here, and Pakistan is constantly worried about increasing Indian involvement in Afghanistan, and the growing India-Afghanistan relationship is of concern to them. And there are constant exchanges of allegations of interference in this aspect as well. So how the US under Joe Biden will be able to navigate these dynamics will be interesting to see.
I wanted to talk a little bit about your book. I really enjoyed reading it. Now, your book's about Indian think tanks. Yeah. And in it, you talked about how these institutions draw upon an extensive network of academics, bureaucrats, military officials, journalists, and diplomats. And I was struck by what you mentioned. You said you noted that in a recent count, there was some 509 operational think tanks in the country, that India is placed second in the list of countries with the largest think tanks, and that these institutions have considerable interest in India-Pakistan relations. So I wanted to ask, in your opinion, is there a lack of investment then towards understanding Pakistan and India? And how effective have think tanks been in tackling the noise and misinformation on Pakistan?
Well, I would say the problem is not lack of investment, but rather the lack of a sustained focus and independence of research that is a bigger factor here. So looking at the history of think tank development in India, there has been considerable policy emphasis on India's strategic interests regarding Pakistan. And most foreign policy think tanks in India have adopted an active research component that is centered on Pakistan. The interest in Pakistan, however, depends a lot on the direction of formal Indian policy as well, and particularly the kind of policy ideas the think tanks come up with. So at the beginning of a dialogue process with India and, between India and Pakistan, and that is the particular attention of the book as well. So the composite dialogue between the years 2004 and roughly early 2014 created a lot of think tank interest, and think tanks played a consultative role, provided advisory policy ideas on relations with Pakistan, as well as promoted government initiatives related to the dialogue. Yet these ideas were restricted to specific policies rather than offering suggestions for any kind of drastic shift in India's position on Pakistan. A lot has to do with the structural environment in which think tanks operate, thus their membership, the research training and background of their members, as well as funding, etc., plays a role. And generally, the understanding of Pakistan within Indian think tanks is reliant on government policy of the time. Therefore, when Manmohan Singh government was engaged in dialogue, think tank interest reflected that. After the 2008 Mumbai attacks and now under the current Modi administration, policy towards Pakistan is increasingly viewed in narrow national security terms, with little research or focus on ideas for cooperation, etc. What I found in my research for the book as well was that even though think tanks engage with policy research, policy agendas on Pakistan are the domain of the Indian state alone, and with avenues for alternative thinking also needing government support. So to answer your question again, think tanks are very much a part of that noise on Pakistan, both good and bad. There are some expert researchers who have spent a long time researching Pakistan and India, but they are also often constrained by their institutional settings. And the lack of a viable diplomatic relationship also restricts think tank engagement.
If I could dig a little deeper, Stuti, do think tanks have a genuine role in policy in India? Are they able to challenge government narratives on Pakistan?
Well, I would say yes, think tanks have a genuine role, but it is a complex one. So based on my assessment, think tanks represent a knowledge power nexus in India. There is a symbiotic relationship that exists between think tanks and policymakers in India. The government uses the resources of think tanks to privilege a particular understanding of a foreign policy issue, providing an avenue for think tanks to have a substantial role. On their part, think tanks also benefit from this relationship with policymakers and gain more institutional relevance. Think tanks also, like I said before, often adjust their discourse to suit government policy directions in order to balance government patronage and policy relevance. Now, it is important to also know that institutional structures at think tanks in India also closely resemble the government. So membership patterns, there is a similarity in professional and socioeconomic backgrounds and political positions. Researchers at think tanks come from similar professional backgrounds, have experienced common training methods, particularly in think tanks funded by the government of India itself. There is also visible an over-reliance on senior researchers and high-profile leadership, together with considerable personal linkages that benefit think tanks. Though there is a growing need for capacity building for younger researchers, in a few think tanks particularly, the presence of former bureaucrats and diplomats and their vast experience is largely preferred. The government also plays an important role in the creation and support, both through financial means and involvement in policy initiatives. So this is also indicative of the growing need for policy expertise on defense and strategic issues. And in doing that, there is also then an implicit government control and regulation of foreign funding through legislations in India. Now, to answer the second part of your question, that is, do think tanks challenge government policy narratives on Pakistan? My answer again would be that it is not that straightforward. It depends on think tanks and their institutional capacities, as well as particular governments and their foreign policy direction, and how receptive they are towards alternative policy ideas on Pakistan coming from think tanks. So in the book, I focus on the composite dialogue period. Because think tanks depend to a great degree on government for financial as well as institutional support, they've found a strong voice for policy research and articulation when government interests reflected the desire for dialogue and engagement with Pakistan. However, as public opinion and political motivations shifted in the post-Mumbai policy landscape, structural constraints, both external and internal, restricted the autonomy and ability of think tanks to effectively interject in the policy process. Now, the current government policy on Pakistan does not favor engagement, and foreign policy ideas have emphasized a militaristic strategy to combat terrorism emanating from Pakistan. There has been an increase in cross-border ceasefire violations, as well as increase in violence in Jammu and Kashmir. India's current Kashmir policy under Prime Minister Modi also places emphasis on a militaristic strategy and encourages an active use of force. This is a very different political landscape to pre-2014 years. Now, the nature of the relationship between think tanks and policymakers has also undergone a change since the election of Narendra Modi as Prime Minister. So the Modi government has a stated intention to draw on think tank expertise. There is an emphasis on creating this image of India as a leading power and a shift towards projecting a stronger Indian state. The government has prioritized engagement with corporate-funded think tanks, including the Observer Research Foundation, which is a very influential and prominent think tank in India, and other think tanks that are linked with the Bharatiya Janata Party in some way, which include the India Foundation and the Vivekananda International Foundation. The India Foundation has partnered with the Ministry of External Affairs to carry out government's public diplomacy initiatives, while the ORF's research programs, its Rise in Our Dialogue in particular, has attracted a lot of attention. Besides this, the MEA is also involved with the Gateway of India, which is sort of like on the same platform as the Council on Foreign Relations in the United States. And they conduct multilateral talks on geoeconomic issues along with other partnerships with think tanks. There is somewhat a region-specific focus or expertise in think tanks at the moment, and a kind of division of labor. So representing India's varied international interests, more prominently now, the relationship with the United States, combating China, reaching out to the Gulf Cooperation Council and the Persian Gulf states and India's South Asian neighbors, but excluding Pakistan. And so the sustained focus on Pakistan that was visible during the composite dialogue period is on the back burner at the moment, unless it relates to terrorism and Indian policy on counterterrorism. So like I said before, think tanks adjust their focus to suit government policy direction. Their role in policy, however, I think, is still crucial, both in engaging with policy ideas and promoting Indian government policy.
I see. I think your book does a wonderful job at portraying the complexity of the debates and discourses that takes place on Pakistan. If I could move to a question regarding the dynamics of the broader region. Pakistan's close relations with China has been an increasing point of interest. Is Pakistan's growing partnership with China a cause for concern in New Delhi?
Oh, yes. And I think there are two concerns for India. One is its own relationship with China, which has recently escalated into violence. And the other is China's relationship with Pakistan, and as well as its growing footprint in the region. So China's Belt and Road Initiative and its continued expansion into South Asia has troubled India, which has traditionally considered South Asia as its own sphere of influence. India views China's ports in the Indian Ocean region through the String of Pearls lens, which are harming its own strategic interests and security. There are also visible signs of Sino-Indian competition for influence in smaller South Asian countries, including Bangladesh, Nepal, and others. The deterioration in US-China relations has also had an impact here. So to counter China's growing influence, India has joined the Quadrilateral Security Dialogue, and there has been growing economic and geopolitical competition between India and China over the last decade, which has resulted in both an investment in military capabilities and infrastructure development, especially near the disputed border with China, which is currently playing out. Now, India's rivalry with China is also a reflection of domestic dynamics here. And so engaging India is aggressively is an aspect of the Chinese government's domestic power struggle. And the Modi government is also significantly driven by a muscular foreign and domestic policy. So violent confrontations in Doklam in 2017 in Ladakh currently play into these dynamics with the backdrop of growing international concerns regarding China and its role in the COVID-19 outbreak. Now, Indian think tanks in the past have highlighted the connection between China and the development of Pakistan's military capabilities, including its nuclear program and assistance to Pakistan's Navy. In fact, during the composite dialogue period itself, ideas from think tanks suggested a trilateral India-Pakistan-China level dialogue, keeping in mind China's support to Pakistan. And the recent deterioration has raised questions about power asymmetries between India and China, the continuing relevance of historical border conflicts, as well as a lack of attention to China policy in an Indian foreign policy discourse that has remained predominantly Pakistan-centric. Thus, there is a lot of research output from Indian think tanks now on the China question, on the Belt and Road Initiative, on China's growing relationship with Pakistan and how the problems associated with it and so on.
Now, moving to something, I guess, everywhere around the world, we're sort of concerned with the pandemic. Has the pandemic changed India-Pakistan relations? I ask because there's opportunities for cooperation, or at least perhaps opportunities for easing tensions between the two countries, because both nations appear to face similar sets of challenges brought on by the fight against COVID-19. So if you could please share your thoughts on that.
Sure. So has it changed the India-Pakistan relationship? I would say no. And on opportunities for cooperation or easing tensions, yes, there are opportunities, but unfortunately, there is very little positive to report here. So in 2020, after the outbreak of the pandemic, Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi convened a video conference of the SAARC nations to collectively work on the threat posed by COVID-19. Now, this was also India's response to China's growing influence in the region and an attempt to reassert India's leadership. India and other SAARC members pledged millions of dollars towards a COVID-19 emergency fund within the SAARC umbrella, and it also announced that it would be putting together a team of specialists for the SAARC states. Now, except for the Prime Minister of Pakistan, who deputed his special advisor and Minister of State for Health, all of the heads of governments of the member countries participated in the video conference. Pakistan, however, shared its reservations on the emergency fund by demanding this to be managed by the SAARC Secretary General instead of by India. In addition, Pakistan used this opportunity to raise its concern on the continued lockdown in Jammu and Kashmir. This followed Pakistan's decision to boycott a video conference on COVID-19 among SAARC trade officials. And as part of this initiative, there was a website to track developments, official case numbers across the region. The organization has also discussed creating integrated surveillance portal and coordinating research on COVID-19. Now, historically, SAARC has suffered due to the problematic India-Pakistan relationship. And this teleconference was its first high-level meeting since 2014. However, the tensions between India and Pakistan were clearly visible here as well. Since then, now in the current period, India has emerged as a major supplier of COVID-19 vaccines. In keeping with its neighborhood first initiative, the Indian government has announced an elaborate vaccine diplomacy strategy to provide vaccines to most of its neighbors and other developing countries. So vaccine shipments have now been received by most of India's neighbors, Bangladesh, Bhutan, Maldives, Nepal, Sri Lanka, in addition to Afghanistan, Seychelles, Myanmar, Mauritius, and others. Now, Pakistan, unfortunately, is conspicuously absent in the list of India's vaccines beneficiaries. And the Indian government's position is that because they've never asked them for it. Instead, Pakistan has decided to use China-made vaccine instead. So coming back to your question, this was an opportunity for cooperation that has somehow again become kind of hostage to the bilateral relationship between India and Pakistan. And so far, the potential for any kind of dialogue or any kind of cooperation between India and Pakistan seems there is a very low possibility of that happening, and it's not looking very good at all.
Yes, that seems to be the picture. Unfortunately, that's all that we have time for. I think you've given us so much to think about. You've condensed so much into such a small space of time. Dr. Studi, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your insights.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It was a pleasure talking to you.
It was a pleasure likewise. You're listening to South Asia Chat. If you wish to learn more about our work, please visit us at isas.nus.edu.sg.